Thank you for downloading the weekly podcast from Radio Today. I'm Trevor Dann. And before we start this week, a short health warning. There's some pretty rich language in the next half an hour, so if you're likely to be offended, or if there are any kids in earshot, then you would be advised to depart now. Also, the views of our main interviewee are not necessarily those either of myself or of Radio Today, but we did think you'd like to hear them, unexpurgated, apart from a few little trims to help ourselves and our guest avoid the attention of my learned friends. So fasten seatbelts, please. Here we go with one of the UK's most explosive talents back on air, or at least online. It's John Gaunt.
The Radio Today programme, with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the Social Studio.
And the Radio Today programme comes to you today from a location not unadjacent to Euston Railway Station. What are we doing here, John Gaunt?
Well, ever since I've been pushed into the radio wilderness, I've been selling copies of The Big Issue, as I used to.
A likely story.
So I may as well have been, but I probably would have got more jobs there. Anyway, so that's joking aside, I'm on my way back up north from doing my show in Islington this morning on foobarradio.com, and this seemed a convenient place to meet. And of course, you're too tight to take me to a restaurant or to a cafe and even buy me a cup of coffee.
It's the Radio Today way, Gaunty. Now, Foobar Radio, I thought it was a comedy station, and then I read that they'd signed you to do a morning show, which is your typical shtick, isn't it? It's ranting about stuff that you're passionate about. So what's that doing on Foobar? How does that work?
Well, I think the bottom line is Foobar needed an audience, and I think wherever I've been, despite everything else, the one thing I can do is get an audience. And it depends how you define comedy. I mean, I don't think I've ever done a straight news story and a straight news programme and a ranting, and I'm not a devil's advocate, any of that. There's always been a lot of humour in my stuff, so it depends how you define comedy. But now, there's quite a good lineup now. There's myself in the mornings, 10 to 1. Then it's Mark Dolan, who's more of a stand-up comedian, but he does a kind of entertainment show. And then, of course, Justin Lee Collins doing a remarkable show, actually. I know Justin's been in a lot of problems, but actually, he's a radio natural, and I don't say that lightly, because there's only about five of them in the whole country, and that includes everybody who's already on so-called traditional radio. And for those of you who say, it's not proper radio, are you the same twats who said, it's not proper radio when it went from valves to transistors, or from steam to valves? It is proper radio. 28 to 30% of people now listen on mobile phones. And it's not internet radio, it's an app. And apps of the future. I was listening to your bit with that future thing that Cridland does and the other geezer.
Yeah, Matt Deegan.
Yeah, and they're right on the money. The future is apps. The big radio stations don't want to admit that at the moment. The moment they admit that, then their cartel will be broken up, because the moment apps really work and the internet really works, why would anyone pay millions of pounds for a radio license? So I think that's why a lot of radio stations haven't invested. I certainly found this with Sun Talk. I think that's why they haven't invested in the internet and in apps in that way. But it's the future, because why does anyone want to be regulated?
Well, let's go back and talk about Sun Talk.
Yeah, sure.
Last time I met you, you were still doing that, and it seemed to be flourishing.
Yeah.
The story went around that Rupert Murdoch arrived one day and said, what the hell's that, and got rid of it instantly. Is there any truth in that?
I've never heard that, and that's absolutely 100% untrue. Actually, Rupert Murdoch came and absolutely loved it. In fact, the only comment Rupert Murdoch made, and it wasn't to me, it was to Chris Stevens, who was the features editor, was just tell him to be more bloody controversial. So it's absolute nonsense, that. I don't know who spreads that.
So why did they take it off then, John?
I think they just wanted to concentrate. Their line was that they wanted to concentrate on their core activity, which was newspapers. That's certainly the line I was given. It had nothing to do with the Ofcom decision. People said, oh, it was the same week that, you know, you lost in the High Court, which I'll go on to in a moment. That was my decision. They told me they wanted to stop and they wanted to carry on for a few months. I said, no, we'll stop now. So that is the only reason it happened in the same week. And they wanted to, as I say, concentrate on their main activity. I think without speaking out of turn, and I wouldn't want to really, because both Rebecca and The Sun gave me a wonderful opportunity, both as a columnist and also to pioneer Sun Talk, which was, again, despite what anybody says, really pioneering stuff. And it's, you know, obviously Foobar and other people have followed on from that, but without that work we did at Sun Talk, I don't think that would have happened. So I don't want to slag them off at all. And I think if they'd carried on, apps were coming, and probably now it'd be flourishing and it would work because they're all moving to that way now anyway, the multimedia. It was ahead of its time. The apps weren't quite there, so the curve wasn't quite there, therefore the listenership wasn't there.
They also didn't properly advertise it in the newspaper, well,
I don't think that's strictly true. I think, ironically, it worked better, and Dominic Mohan was a big person behind it and wanted it to happen, but it worked better when he wasn't there. When Graham Dudman, who was the executive editor, was there was a few occasions where he put... It wasn't so much an advert, it was how you prompted them on the front page. There was one day when we did the Somalian, the first time the Somalian story, that always comes up now, about them having a massive house in Notting Hill or whatever and costing thousands of pounds in rent. The phones were literally in meltdown. I've never, even when I was on TalkSport, never had that many phone calls. So it was about getting it right. So it was about learning. We were all fumbling in the dark. And I think in the light of what happened with phone hacking, it would have probably been impossible to carry on editorially to have an open line where people could ring in with their prejudices. And I don't really want to get into the phone hacking, but you understand where I'm coming from. I still think it's a model that will work. It's the logical thing for a newspaper group to do because what was really interesting about it, which again I don't think we got credit for, was the fact that he was merging that whole thing, you know, is it a newspaper, is it audio, is it radio, was it going to become television, and it was all of those things, and it was really playing games with the regulator, which was really interesting, really, really interesting. And when newspapers want more and more content for their apps, there's no better way of getting that content, as you know, than with radio. And if I could just finish, I'm having a documentary. Somebody's picked up on my 7/7 work that I did on BBC London, and they made the point to me the other day while we're doing all the research on it that that was the last big event that, listen, it's really interesting, that will ever be covered by radio, because that was before Facebook and Twitter. And you think about that day, telly couldn't get 7/7. I got it on BBC London because people rang as soon as they came out of the tunnels. It was some of the most amazing audio. And what I'm trying to say is, with a SunTalk kind of application, and if another paper was to take that up, I think they would be absolutely quids in. Because as you know, radio and audio gets into other places that other media just can't get into.
Let me take you back to your favourite subject, which is regulation, the authorities. We were talking to Hursty last week at Next Radio, and he'd done this presentation about how we've all really become a bit risk averse.
You have, yeah.
And I think, you know, that's a ceiling you've banged your head on regularly in commercial radio and in the BBC. Is FUBAR going to allow you to do absolutely what you want?
Yeah, well, that's just nonsense. I mean, doing anything absolutely what you want, you have to have control, don't you? Radio is a control mechanism, and it's a very personal medium. So, for example, some of the comedians swear, and I've said I don't agree with that. I don't actually agree with effing and blinding. I don't think being not regulated means you can say cunt or fuck. I don't think it does mean that. I think what it means is you can explore ideas without worrying about balance or worrying about impartiality. Look, let's be straight. Even the Director General, three Director Generals have said impartiality is impossible. You know it's impossible. You worked in radio and at the BBC. Not only is impartiality impossible, why should you have balance in talk radio? Hear me out. In talk radio, it's a soap opera, it's a continuum. You either listen once to James Whale or John Gaunt or whoever it is. I'm talking about talk radio, not BBC Five. You listen and you either like it or hate it, and you don't listen again. If you like it, you keep listening. So the balance can come over a period of time. And I think I'm a pretty balanced presenter. This morning, for example, we've had Tommy Robinson on from the English Defence League. I gave him a 45-minute interview. Who else would do that? Now, of course, it's safer to do it anyway now, because a lot of what Tommy Robinson said, ex-founder of the EDL, has come true, hasn't it, with Rotherham. But then we had Anne John Chowdhury on. Then we'll have a more, if you want to put it in inverted commas, moderate Muslim. And I don't think I have banged my head against regulation. Let's go back. You know, I've only ever had one or two press complaints against me when I've been increasing the audience massively. I've never been done for swearing or any of that kind of nonsense. And let's absolutely be sure about TalkSport now. TalkSport sacked me because they wanted to go all football. They found it as a convenience excuse. I stand by what I said that day. I'm the only man of real principle in British radio. Let's face it. The guy was a Nazi. He was a health Nazi. And I think I've been proved right, haven't I? Because actually, isn't it more dangerous that children are being left in residential care homes? Shall we point to the Savile case? Shall we point to the historic sex abuse that I was actually intimating on that day? And I think that's a lot more dangerous than smoking, passive smoking. They got rid of me, even Ofcom. And don't forget, I never talked, and also in the industry, go on to TalkSport to court. No, I didn't. I took Ofcom to court. And I took them because I believe they infringed my rights to free speech. I should have exactly the same right, and every other DJ should have exactly the same right as the man in the street or the man on the Clapham Omnibus to have his views. They were trying to cut my political speech. Now, let me tell you, political speech is the most protected freedom that we have in this country. And just an exclusive for you, now Gaunty's taken on the British government. The government have had to answer. We've just replied to them. It will be in the European Supreme Court. I know there's an irony there, but you have to use whatever law. I will win. Ofcom were wrong. I will win this case, and it will be good for the radio industry. Why do you want to be regulated? We have the law of libel, the law of defamation. We have hate crime now. None of those things I would actually obviously do on air. And you don't need any other law. You do not need Ofcom. We do not need to be spending £400,000 on the idiot who runs it. I'm sure he's a lovely person, but we don't need Ofcom. And to anybody in the radio industry, especially presenters and producers, think about this. Your management, they'll ditch you no matter what audience you get for them to protect their own backs. That's what's wrong with Ofcom. And I just feel, you know, people maybe have misunderstood what my case was. Well, they have, because that's why I think I've been in the wilderness. No one will give me a job. John Gaunt's a troublemaker.
Well, that's and you're not backwards and coming forward. You know,
what's being a troublemaker about having the intellectual argument about the most important thing in the world, freedom of speech? Which goes back, and it's not about the European courts, goes back to the Magna Carta. What's so bad about that? And if the idiots who ran British Radio thought that through, if I win, I give them lots more freedom and therefore lots more money that they can make.
Now, were there ever
I'm not a troublemaker, and I just want to put it right on the record here. I did not take TalkSport to court. But let me assure you, when I win in the Supreme Court, I will be taking TalkSport to court.
Were there times when you were in the wilderness, as you described it, when you thought, you know what, I've been a bit of a tit, really, because if only I'd minded my P's and Q's a bit, I'd be famous, I'd have a platform for my views.
You're making the same mistake. My P's and Q's, that's the same prejudice. One incident. You accept it's one incident.
Is that the only place you've ever been sacked from?
Yes.
Why did you leave BBC Coventry?
Here we go then. That is the only place. Go back to your question first. I'll come on to BBC Coventry.
Okay.
Did I ever feel in the wilderness if I'd minded my P's and Q's? Yes, of course there's been times when I do that, but I wouldn't be able to live with myself. My daughter, who's now at Christchurch, she said, Daddy, there's one thing about you, you're a man of principle, and we don't care. You're right. And I know I'm right. 67,000 children in children's homes in England and Wales alone. I know I'm right. So, no, I didn't ever think about that. I didn't ever think, I don't want to name the person because I actually quite respect him as a presenter. But he once said to me, oh, John, your problem is you don't give them what they want. You don't give them what they want. I don't want to be that kind of presenter. I don't want to be like that. And radio's not that important to me. I can do other things and I have done other things. Don't get me wrong, I've loved the red light going back on because we all love that madness, don't we? But no, I don't regret it. I stand by what I said. I believe they had the moral backbone of jellyfish. They were wrong to sack me. I mean, I wouldn't criticise TalkSport. 3 million listeners, you can't criticise that. Anyway, going back to BBC Coventry, I didn't get the sack from BBC Coventry, and anybody who said that want to be very, very careful. What happened on BBC Coventry was I was offered a job on the Daily Star when I was on BBC London, right, your X station, which, as you know, has never got a fucking audience, right, even when it was GLR. They haven't, even when Chris was there. Never got an audience, right? Mainly because you as well, and Bannister, and Roby, and the rest of them, don't know what to do. Because you all think London's something different. You're all fucking wrong. London is exactly the same as the rest of the country. Yes, there's lots of different things about the metropolis. I remember a classic tale. We did a load of shopping centre tour when I got on BBC London, and I went to Croydon, the Whitgift Centre, and I was mobbed. And I was mobbed by a lot of black young women. Why? Because they said I reminded them of their dads because I was so strict. But my point is, there's loads of working class people who want to talk about how bad society is. It's a bit like the Scottish referendum. Oh, you know, we want a new form of democracy, says Irving Walsh last night on Channel 4. He actually began to convince me. I understand. But they're disconnected, but we're disconnected in Coventry, we're disconnected in Croydon, we're disconnected, da-da-da-da-da. So what BBC London should have always done is appeal to those people. Anyway, I got a job on the Daily Star. I got offered a job on the Daily Star, a column. I went to Roby and said, and you know, this is a matter of fact, you know, and that other, the fool above him. I like Roby, but the fool above him, I've forgotten his name, he's a no-mark. Anyway, so I said, look, you haven't got an audience. We were beginning to build an audience. I think Danny was there at the time as well then. And I said, I've got a job on the Daily Star, that'd be great. Every week they'll put all the fact, listen to Gaunty on BBC London. Oh no, you can't do that. I said, hold on. I said, what do you mean I can't do that? Vanessa Feltz does it, right? Oh no, but she's a star. What do you mean she's a star, right? Well, she was a star before she got a job on the BBC. You what? So I said, oh, all right, then never. So I let it lie, and it was quite a bit of money. Then I got pulled in by this guy who ran BBC London above Roby a few weeks later. Oh, we're reopening, you know, the classic BBC, of course. Nigel Chapman, the other man who single-handedly destroyed BBC local radio, in my opinion, and I told him to his face. That, I mean, I did tell him that to his face at the Gillards. One of my classic moments is in my book, and he's never challenged it, so it must be true. I said, what the fuck are you? I said, Nigel, surprised to see you at the Gillards. It was in Bristol. He was in a lift full of people. He said, why is that? I said, because this is meant to be recognised local radio talent and local BBC local radio. And you fucking wanker, single-handedly destroyed it and dismantled it with things like your decision to merge BBC Coventry and WM because you didn't have a fucking clue. You think Brummies are like Coventry people, right? Again, I was proved right, wasn't I? 3 years later, Trevor, when they reopened it. But here, BBC, classic BBC, £3 million spent on reopening BBC Coventry, new studios, state-of-the-art, wonderful. They did everything right apart from one thing. They hadn't got any talent. They hadn't got any local talent. They got Liz Kershaw, brilliant presenter, eventually. And then they approached me. So they approached me and said, would you go down? And I said, what the hell would I want to go back to Coventry? Oh, it's your hometown. Well, yeah, I love Coventry, but I'm not going to go back. We'll pay you the same as London. Well, little bit known to them, I'd just been approached by The Sun to be a columnist on The Sun, so I thought that'd be marvellous. I'd do BBC Coventry Breakfast, and I'll write The Sun once a week, and I could almost retire, and I'd do telly, that'd be marvellous. So I went to BBC Coventry. A few weeks later, I told them, oh, the good news, you know, once I got the contract signed with The Sun, here's the good news, boys, you're relaunching Coventry, it'd be great now, because I'm going to do The Sun, that's going to happen. And to be fair, Pat Lockery, he's a man who I really respect. He ran local radio at the time. He said, John, you won't be able to do it. I said, what do you mean I won't be able to do it? And Andy Griffey, who I don't respect, but fair dues to him, they were both cut up about it. And I said, well, Pat Lockery said, I don't blame you, John. You're going to have to go to The Sun. You don't turn down an opportunity to be a columnist on The Sun. I said, but you're mad. If I do both, we'll get BBC Coventry and we'll get the figures back to where, you know, blah, 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 blah. They wouldn't budge. And I said, this is wrong. Vanessa is doing it. This is wrong. And I said, I'm a self-employed subcontractor. This is wrong. You cannot do this. This is against the law, against the tax law. So I was not sacked from BBC Coventry. They said, you'll have to make a choice between Murdoch's money and the BBC. And I said, well, as he's paying me more fucking money than you could ever imagine, you can stick your fucking BBC local radio station right up your arse and where the sun don't shine. And Pat laughed. Pat thought that was funny, which it was. Yeah. And that was it. So I was not sacked by BBC Coventry. And anybody who suggests that, I will take action because that is not the case. Then, what did the BBC do 6 months later, Trevor? Can you now write columns for newspapers? Yes. Can you now work on other radio stations? Yes. Who brought that about? Me. Because I challenge them through the tax. Because who do the BBC think they are that can have you as a self-employed tax person and tell you where you can work? It was proved to be illegal. It was proved to be illegal. And they said, oh, people won't know because you'll be biased in the columns. You'll have to be. Well, yes. But see, this is another thing where the BBC and radio people are mental. Well, not mental, they're just thick. People know, that's my opinion. They know, oh, he's off on one now. And, oh, well, he thinks this and he thinks that. You don't influence people like that. You know, and like I say, I've always brought on other people with completely different views to me. So I just, you know, people say, oh, you're the devil's advocate. That isn't what I am. Anybody who thinks that's my act is wrong. That isn't the act. The act is the world seen through my eyes. So I would suggest to anyone, listen to my output and pinpoint where I've contradicted myself. And you won't find one. You won't find one where one day I'm pro-abortion, pro-choice, and one day I'm anti-abortion. You won't find that. You just will not find it. You might find me saying, actually, I'm beginning to change my mind, a bit like Irvin Welsh. He began to convince me last night about Scottish independence. It's that kind of thing. So it's a living organism, and that's the whole thing about why you don't need Ofcom for talk radio. I agree that, you know, somebody swears and uses offensive language or hate and all that. Yeah, of course. But you don't need it in terms of taste and decency. which is what Ofcom was suggesting. And Newberg, the judge, said, you know, I mean, he's probably never listened to proper talk radio. He's probably only listened to Radio 4. See, this is the other problem, where they're disconnected. You know, and the Today programme's a great show. In fact, he's so fucking good. Why don't they privatise it and knobs like you will pay the subscription? No, but it's true, isn't it? I don't want to listen to it.
I don't think I should edit this, by the way.
No, don't edit it at all. Don't edit it at all. Well, don't edit it to make me look bad, because I'll have you. But, I mean, edit it. No, why should you edit it? I'm being straight. I'm being absolutely straight. I stand by everything I'm saying. Radio 4. People always say, oh, look, BBC, bring it down to size, right? I believe in the licence fee. It doesn't need to be as high as it is. It can be cut down. BBC local radio should be protected. Greg Dyke was right. It's the front door of the BBC. Absolutely should be protected. But what they shouldn't be able to do is wall-to-wall fucking Carpenter's music, right? There should be no music on BBC local radio. It should be all talk. Apart from local bands, specialists in the evening, whatever, right? That's the first thing with local radio. That should be protected. Radio 1 and 2 should be sold off. Ben Cooper, who was my fucking T-boy at Luton, right? He was my T-boy. He's my producer. He buggers off and does the Chris Moyles show. I'm driving down a motorway from Coventry to listen to listening to Moyles before I do my show in Luton. And he's doing all my act, the fat little twit. By the way, incredibly talented. Should have a job on the radio. Absolute disgrace that British Radio isn't using him. Yes, what he did with tax, a bit dodgy, but Gary Barlow's still selling records, isn't he? Anyway, going back to my point. So Ben Cooper, his defence of radio, even you wouldn't have come out with this one. Even Bannister wouldn't have come out with this one. Yes, no, we're not commercial. How could we be commercial? What commercial radio station would do a 16, I may be misquoting him slightly, a 16-part series about HIV? Answer, Ben, no fucking radio station, because you're a music station. You should be playing great music, not justifying yourself by being a social worker. That is not your role on BBC Radio 1. So let's privatise that. Let's privatise Radio 2, the best breakfast show going. Chris Evans, a radio genius, one of the five that I was telling you about earlier, an absolute genius. The rest of it, love it, fantastic. But the commercial sector will take it. But let's move on to the controversial one, Radio 4. Please inform me why Radio 4 can't be a subscription station and people like you can pay £2.99 a month, because you love it, don't you? I couldn't live without Radio 4. You hear all these twats in The Guardian and The Telegraph. Okay, fucking pay. Why should I pay for it? I don't want to listen to John Humphrey's bias. I don't want to listen to it. I watch Channel 4, and I'm pretty willing to pay for Channel 4 on the telly. I can't bear Jon Snow and his little bleating YouTube nonsense, yeah? Using the same studio to get round the Ofcom rules. How can he do that? Oh, the terrible Israelis, the Jews, in his anti-Semitic rant, which is what I suggest it was, in a Channel 4 studio, but on YouTube to get round Ofcom. How would have Ofcom done about that? Do you see what I'm trying to say? So in the modern multi-platform age, why do you need Ofcom? Jon Snow clearly thinks we shouldn't have an Ofcom. And the rest of the time, they don't seem to bother about impartiality or balance. Yeah? Nick Robinson, look at the accusations against him recently. He doesn't seem to worry too much about it either. And, you know, the irony of the BBC is, when you go to any BBC local radio station, which I go to loads of times, don't I, to do interviews down the line, what's the two things you're guaranteed to see in a BBC newsroom? The three things. One, Sky TV on the telly, Sky News, because they nick all the stories from it. The Sun in the studio, and the Mail, because they're nicking all the phone-in subjects, which they're going to talk about in between the vet section, the dog section, and the corn section, and the gardening section, and the kind of marketplace, which they've brought back. And what's that awful show they're doing now, Treasure Hunt, or whatever it's called, on a Saturday? They would turn the clock back 30 years. Poor old Frank Gillard, unless he was cremated, he must be spinning in his grave. Local radio, the clue's in the title, Mr. Holdsworth. Local. Anyway, going back to, so you see Sky News, you see The Guardian in the editor's office, because that's meant to be the editorial policy, isn't it? But the rest of it is coming out. It's just nonsense. So, local radio, all talk, dead simple. Big local personalities, unintelligible. You come to Coventry, you shouldn't be able to understand what we're talking about. We go to Cambridge, I shouldn't be able to understand Cambridge. That's what Frank Gillard's vision was, and that's what we should return to, and that should be publicly funded, because the market won't supply it, mainly because the people who run the cancer that is commercial local radio don't want to do local radio, do they? The only thing local about it is now and again an advert. The rest of it, those big groups, oh dear me. Would I want to present on those stations? No.
Gaunty, I'm going to take a risk now. It's a terrible risk. I've never done anything quite this bad.
Cut me off.
I'm going to shut you up.
Go on then.
Is that all right?
No,
you've got a train to catch.
No, I haven't got a train to catch, but I'm perfectly willing to talk about radio. I just don't want to be misrepresented.
Good
and
man.
Going back to FUBAR, I think FUBAR is very, very interesting. I think the whole idea of being on an app is really interesting.
And you're on 10 till 1?
Oh, I don't think anyone listening to
online.
This. I don't think anyone out here is going to actually listen to you.
No, they are. They are now.
Really, truly. I tell you the weirdest thing. Just like on Sun Talk, I'm doing the most balanced radio I've ever done on FUBAR. And it was the same on Sun Talk, which is really odd. Where there's no regulation, it's actually more balanced, which is kind of bizarre. And the most amazing thing as well, the most amazing thing, is the guest list that I've had. Just being able to, everybody, I've been in the wilderness, but I ring up people, or the producer rings up people and say, oh, it's the John Gaunt Show. We don't mention FUBAR, obviously, because it's only a small piddling station. But we mention my name, and they want to come on. And, you know, like I say, the list has been tremendous. So for that, I really thank people. For those in the radio industry who have decided to blackball me, and I've clearly, I would like this to be left on if possible, I've clearly been blackballed by BBC Local Radio, which I think is an absolute disgrace, right?
Well, you've been very welcome on the Radio Today programme, even though you've been really rude to me. I'll let you off.
No, I like you. I like you.
Oh, no, that's even worse.
And I like Bannister. I liked what he was trying to do. I liked what you were trying to do at Radio 1. I actually agree with it. See, no, there's not a problem there, mate.
No, you've just gone all soft. No. Thank you very much, Gaunty.
You shit up on BBC Cambridge, though, when you're a presenter.
Good luck with your FUBAR show. And shall we have the news now from Roy Martin? I think we should.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Thank you, Trevor. The latest. UKRD has submitted a format request change for Eagle Extra to allow its AM frequency to carry the programmes of Premier Christian Radio instead of local news and programming. The group will announce its plans for the station after Ofcom has made a decision on the public consultation, which is now live. Asian Sound Radio is joining the Bradford and Huddersfield DAB multiplex. It marks the first time the station has been made available outside of its East Lancashire transmission area since it launched 18 years ago. And Dave and Lisa, breakfast show presenters at 95. Great Capital FM, are going on the network with a new weekend breakfast show every Saturday. That's the latest. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
Time now for some radio moments. Here's David Lloyd.
We start this week 2 years ago, and a Radio 1 farewell.
The time has sadly come for us to say goodbye. We want to leave you all with a tear in your eye. We've had a lot of fun, we moaned when we were tired. And every single month we came close to being fired. So thanks for tuning in, but now it's time for us to say goodbye.
For more than 8 years, we entertain the nation.
The final Chris Moyles Breakfast Show on Radio 1 this week in 2012. Chris had spent some time on air on this station too, albeit under a different brand, which launched originally this week 39 years ago.
On top of the world.
Seven past six o'clock. It's Must Admit It's. Nice to be the very first programme on the wireless. Right, first time in the morning.
The early moments in the life of Pennine, now Pulse, this week in 1975. Like many of those early stations, Pennine was housed in a very old building. I think it was an old cinema, wasn't it? And here's a station which was housed in an old carpet shop when it launched this week in 1980.
Good morning, Hampshire. Good morning, Dorset.
Before I begin, I'd like to pay tribute to the people who've worked so hard and for so long to make this new service possible. They are many, and to them all I say thank you. To you I say it's good to know you, and for the Moody Blues, it's lovely to see you.
The early moments in the life of 2CR from Bournemouth, now half of Heart South Coast. From the press this week, what have we got here? A copy of Adweek magazine, 14th of September, 1973, and the headline is Capital Spot Switch. And it goes on to say, Capital Radio is expected to fall in line soon, fall in line with other commercial stations and introduce a 45-second spot length. Apparently on Capital, you could have a 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, not a 45, and everybody else you could have a 45. So they gave in this week in 1973. I think by this week in 89, ads were all decimal lengths, and that was just in time for the launch of this station.
Good morning. It's just after a quarter to eight on Friday, the 15th of September, 1989. Welcome to your brand new 24-hour classic hit radio station for Oxfordshire and West Buckinghamshire. This is 102.6 Fox FM.
The launch of Fox FM in Oxford, now Hart, this week 25 years ago. This week last year, radio said an unexpected farewell to Henry Owens. Henry had been managing director of Atlantic 252 and also part of the programme management at Galaxy and Virgin too.
This is your 500,000-watt blowtorch, Atlantic 252-921. A mixture of sunshine and rain today in Scotland, Ireland and Northern England. Cloudy in the south, a high 7 degrees. And Jason Donovan.
Farewell, Henry Owens, and he was always riveting company around the dinner table for sure. The first ever money quiz on radio was called Have a Go, and this week in 1946, as post-war radio sorted itself out, it moved from the home service to the light programme. Now, Have a Go starred Wilfred Pickles, and he took his wife Mabel right around the country to church halls and similar venues to do a quiz show.
And she's a very charming lady with nice grey hair and a very nice grey frock. It's very nice to have you here. Yes. Will you tell me your name?
Mrs. Florence Holt.
Mrs. Florence?
Yes.
Have a Go, Flo. Mrs. Florence Holt, where do you live?
Wally Road, Chickawa.
Well, Alan, I know your missus, you said, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes.
I know that a lot of women in this part of Lancashire, and indeed all of Lancashire, do go out to work, as well as being housewives.
Yes.
Do you do a job, too?
Yes, I'm a bus conductress.
So we've got to give you some tune titles. That'll be all right for you. You'll get some play.
Yes,
now, Harry Hudson will play them, and here's number one, Harry, number one, and they're all animals. Off we go. You're dead right. Half a crown, Mabel. And for 5 shillings, here's another animal. Listen.
Horsey, keep your tail.
You're dead right. Five more.
Let's do one more.
And here we go with tune number three.
Beat that wolf.
Yes, you're so right.
I love that show. Have a Go, which was said to attract an audience of 20 million at its height. The show lasted 21 years and never visited the same place twice for an outside broadcast. It's been a long 2 years since Lord Patton stepped out blinking into the sunshine outside Broadcasting House to introduce his new Director General.
We're absolutely convinced that under George, the BBC will build on its reputation as the greatest public service broadcaster, arguably the greatest broadcaster in the world.
And I'm very pleased that the chairman and the trustees think I'm the right person for the job. Mark Thompson will be a tough act to follow, but it's a privilege to be asked to lead the greatest broadcasting organisation in the world, and it's a privilege to be given the chance to continue to serve our audiences in this new job as I have in my previous one.
17th of September 2012, George Entwistle took over as BBC Director General. His reign was to last 54 days. Happy birthday this week to two broadcasting veterans.
I've DJed many shows, I've played the hits and misses, I've seen the way it goes. My girlfriend likes the job I do, it grips her heart and soul.
On the programme tomorrow, Gerald Flood and Michael Croft are our guests, and we look forward to the pleasure of your company at 9:02. In 40 seconds from now, Jimmy Young takes the Radio 2 airwaves.
Yes, happy birthday to Pete Murray. He's 89 this week. He was on Luxembourg, the light programme, Radio 2, and also on the first day of Radio 1 as well. Before that, we heard a singing Brian Matthew. He's a sprightly 86 this week and still on air too after 65 years. So, with Ralph Bernard taking over as chief executive of GCAP this week 9 years ago.
However, I'm bound to say that David and I, you know, remained very amicable throughout this period.
Nottingham getting its first radio station 90 years ago.
This is the Nottingham Relay Station, 5NG calling.
Signal Gold launching 22 years ago.
Here on Signal Gold.
Scott FM on the air 20 years ago.
What do you do? Does it mean going out the house and leaving the children?
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thank you, David. That's it. Your views on anything you've heard in the podcast, very welcome. I'm Trevor at trevordan.com. Keep up with all the UK news and gossip at radiotoday.co.uk, and we'll see you next time.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.